Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Well, today we're discussing something that's very near and dear to my heart, because I'm old. And so, hello, this is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. I'm Dan Hurst. There's Mark Halleck over there.
Hey, guys.
Who's not old.
Mark's the only one that's not old.
What generation are you considered?
I'm a Gen Xer, man. I'm a Gen Xer. I was born in 1976.
76?
Yeah, oh, man. 76.
What a kid.
I was driving in 76. That was the year I got my driver's license.
I don't remember 76.
Well, you don't remember the 70s at all. I was around you in those years, so.
Listen, if you are pastoring a church that is older than 20 years, we're going to talk about something that you really need to process. Most of the decision makers in your church, or the people who think they're the decision makers in your church, are what we call the builders.
Yeah.
Who are the builders?
Well, we don't call them that. Sociologists call them that. You know, the greatest generation were those who were born before 1925, and they both endured the Great Depression and fought in the Second World War. And they were the greatest generation. And basically, they are nearly all gone. You know, as we record this podcast, Bob Barker just passed away at almost 100, 99. And if you've ever watched The Price is Right, you're just grateful he came so close to 100 without going over. Amen?
He's here all week, folks.
Very good.
I was waiting for a come-on-down joke.
You've been waiting for that all week.
I've been waiting for that all week. But Bob Barker, born in 1923, was the greatest generation, his generation. He grew up in the Depression. His generation fought the Second World War, the greatest generation. But there's very few of those left. The matriarchs and patriarchs in most of our churches are what's called the builder generation. Those are people born before 1946. After 46, it's you and me, Hurst. We're the boomers.
Yeah.
But the really older folks, matriarchs and patriarchs in our churches, many of them are the builder generation. And they're called that because they were born before 1946, probably 1930 to 1946. And they didn't fight in the Second World War, and they really weren't old enough to fully experience and understand the Depression. But they're the ones who rebuilt the nation. They're the ones after the Second World War that took the lead in General Motors and all these other businesses and really rebuilt the nation. And they're the ones that gave birth to the boomers, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But they are the builder generation. And unless you understand them and their worldview and how they process decisions, you're going to have a really difficult time asking them to embrace any kind of major change in your church.
Okay, now here's something to consider. The group that I have, I would say about 80% of them are builders. They're in that age group. I've got an older generation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Halleck, you have a very different situation. So what percentage would you consider to be that age group?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's changed over the years. I mean, from when I first came to now, we've grown with a lot of younger families. I mean, honestly, man, I bet you now, I don't know, maybe 5%.
Yeah.
Maybe 10%, maybe. But that's changed over time.
But what was it when you first showed up?
Yeah, it was much higher, 50%, 60%.
You ran them off? Is that what you said?
No. Let's just say a lot of them are with Jesus.
That's okay. Right. They transitioned.
The last couple of churches that you've worked with.
Oh, yes. You
know, what percentage?
Oh, 70% or more. Yeah.
So we're looking at a real, it's a wide, what's the word that I'm looking for? There's a disparity, in a number of churches.
Yeah.
And so we're talking to a bunch of people in our podcast. We're talking to some younger pastors who are dealing with people who are old as their parents or older.
Yeah. Or their grandparents.
Or their grandparents.
So let's talk about people born between 1930 and 1946. So we're talking basically people in their 80s.
Okay.
A lot of times, that's kind of what we're talking about now. Late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm, and here's the deal, guys. You can be in your late 70s or early 80s now and be incredibly active.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a friend of mine today whose dad is a farmer in Western Kansas. He's 89 and he still gets on the tractor every day.
Wow.
My own father-in-law is in his early 80s. He still gets up and he's a construction guy, he remodels houses and stuff, still works every day. You've got a lot of people in their late 70s and 80s who are still very active.
Hey, listen to this. You know what the fastest growing sport is?
Pickleball,
baby.
Pickleball. That's right.
They're everywhere. And it's this generation.
That's right.
Man. They're everywhere.
My in-laws play pickleball.
You bet.
They have a place. They live in Surprise, Arizona half the year, and they go down. They have these pickleball tournaments.
Oh, totally, man. They're
totally
into it.
So, again, I think the idea that we think these people are at the end of their life, well, they may be, but they're very active and very engaged.
Yep.
And here's what you really need to know about these folks. Many of them feel marginalized by the culture, but the church is one place where they can still be very important.
That's right.
And still have a lot of control, and they're used to that. So it's just important to understand the uniqueness of this builder generation, what made them who they are, what their worldview is, and how they process information and how they make decisions. Because if you don't understand that, you're going to have a very difficult time working with them through revitalization. They many times are the real patriarchs and matriarchs in your church, the ones who really make decisions.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's
people
right.
look to them, or people defer to them out of just gratitude for them being around for so long.
Yeah. Or if they're not making decisions, you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. That's right. One or the other.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Dr. Rayner, Tom Rayner, who is like you and me, Dan. He's a boomer. But he came up with these one time, and he and I talked about them. I think they're really good. So here are really four really characteristics of builders. And this helps us understand how to communicate to them. First of all, this generation, man, they are so loyal to institutions. There is a generational institutional loyalty. They were guys who went to work at Chrysler and worked there their whole life.
Their whole life.
They went to work at Maubel, worked there their whole life. The idea that you stay in one place, you buy one house, it may be 900 square feet, you may raise five kids in it, but you don't move. If you're a Chevrolet guy, you're always a Chevrolet guy.
Well, and man, of the four we're looking at, I was thinking about this. This is a way probably, I don't think this is overstating it, where my generation and younger generations, they couldn't be more different
than talk
builders
about that. Yeah, go ahead.
In this regard.
Yeah, so you get a pastor who is your generation, and he's working with deacons who are the builder generation.
That's right.
So talk to me about what your generation, how they view generational institutional loyalty.
Well, I mean, the problem is, I mean, if you just look at our culture as a whole, I think many younger generations are skeptical of institutions in any way, skeptical of authority. And sadly, we see that creep into the church. And I think what you see with that is this kind of consumer Christianity, quite frankly. And so you get young families or whatever who feel a sense of entitlement. Like, why would I stay here in this old church with some cranky people when I could go down the street to the mega church and my kids have Disneyland for a children's ministry? I mean, do you see what I mean? So like one of the things we're battling in this revitalization, replanting world is exactly what we're talking about. How do you engage a generation that values institutions, loyalty? Well, and I think part of it is it's humility.
Yeah.
It's humbling yourself and recognizing, man, maybe our younger generation does not have this all figured out. In fact, there's so much we can learn from the builder generation.
Okay, but the boomer and the Gen Xer particularly, the younger generation, they would look at people who are incredibly loyal to institutions as people who are stuck in their ways, who are living in the past, who can't be flexible and can't pivot quick enough. Whereas your builder generation looks at young people and say, well, you're not loyal to anything.
Exactly.
You're not committed to anything. You don't know what commitment is.
That's right.
You're flighty.
That's
you
right.
Know.
That's right.
And this really comes about, guys. Listen, when you take Baptist out of the name, it's builders who don't like you taking Baptist out of the name.
Well, that's a good point.
Because they are institutional people. You know, it's like,
or changing even the logo, that little SBC logo. I noticed that. And I've seen churches where they get a new sign.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second. What about the SBC symbol?
Put that on there. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's really important to understand that when they don't want you to take Baptist out of the name, that is a cultural thing with builders. They have this institutional commitment. And actually, guys and ladies, that strong institutional commitment rebuilt this nation after the Depression and the Second World War.
Yeah.
And that's why they are called builders.
Yeah.
And yet in their 70s and 80s, they don't have the jobs they used to have. They don't have the power and influence they used to have in the culture or in the workplace, but they can have it in the church.
Yep.
So they take that same experience and bring it to the church. So I'm just telling you, you need to understand what you're dealing with when you're dealing with these folks.
And let me say this. This is so interesting, by the way, because I think we could look
I hope it is.
Some of the negatives.
As this podcast goes on, I think the jury's out on it, frankly. but we'll see if it picks up a little bit.
But here's one of the positive things about this is, man, there's things we need to learn. I guess practically, if I'm a pastor going into a church filled with builders, what can I learn from that generation?
Oh, that's great.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
What can I learn? And I think that's a posture we need
that's right.
to lead change.
All right, so number one, you ready? They have incredible institutional loyalty. That means the Sunday School Board, which now is Lifeway, which they don't understand all the changes in that. The Home Mission Board, which is now the North American Mission Board. The Foreign Mission Board, which is now International Mission Board. I mean, everything's changed. And they grew up in this very systematic approach where they knew exactly what everything was. So this, even in their own denomination, they feel like they can't quite. And then you start digital online giving.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Oh, man.
I mean, they're used to filling out an envelope, putting the money in there. The whole. So yeah. I'm just telling you to be sensitive yeah. and aware that these are not just cantankerous people. This yeah. is a generation.
That's right.
And these are their traits, and these were their strengths. Now, I'm not telling you to get into it either, but you just need to understand it going in. Mm-hmm. That helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And so how do you communicate to them? Well, number one, you don't knock them over the head and tell them that they're out of date mm-hmm. and their systems are bad. Rather, they love to tell stories.
Yep. That's so number two. That's
number two. So number one, they are very institutionally loyal. Number two, they love to tell stories. So engage them in telling you stories. Tell me about this church. Tell me why this mattered to you.
So
and when you first went to Calvary and
yeah.
you had some older people
yep.
there, you did exactly
that's
that.
That's exactly right. One of the first things we did is we took a retreat when our church had moved from about 30 to 60, we went on a retreat for a weekend. And literally what we did is we spent a lot of time, and I've talked about this before, the newer folks just listening to the 30 who'd been there. And all we did for 3 hours is just tell us stories about what God has done in this church. And there were tears and there was joy. And I'll tell you what, it helped our people. They fell in love with each other as those stories were told because that was so precious to those who had been there for so long.
If you do not let the builder generation tell you stories, you'll never really connect with them.
Yeah.
But asking them to tell you their stories, to tell you about the history of this church, to tell you about the experiences they've had here, to tell you about the history of their growing up, to let them talk to you through stories, and then you tell stories to them. Again, sometimes Gen Xers, we just don't have time for those stories.
We
don't care about the past. We just care about the future. Mm-hmm. Where are we going, not where we've been? And if you want them to go with you, you've got to engage them in stories.
That's exactly right.
And it's really important to do that. And you learn a lot from them.
That's good. Yes.
As a pastor, you learn who they are, what their life experiences were. Guys, if you're not asking those builders to tell you their stories, to listen to those stories, and you'll see them come alive when they begin to talk about it. You ever, Hurst, you spend a lot of time in nursing homes. at least you look like it. But Dan and I have done ministry in nursing homes, and, you know, what do they want to? They want to tell their stories about the farm, about their animals, about their children.
Why
about
does
their
that matter? Why does that matter
so
much?
Oh, I can tell
you
exactly why it matters.
Okay,
because if they can't tell their stories, they're no longer relevant.
That's good.
And if you make them relevant, now you've got something. You've got a spark there because now I'm worth something.
Yeah,
right. You know, and it's not that they want to go back to their stories. Mm-hmm. But they understand that their stories were the foundation of who they are.
Yeah.
And that's relevant.
That is.
You know, that means something to them because it made them who they are. And if you can key in on that relevancy and get them to see how relevant that is for today's ministry, you'll own them. And I don't mean that in the wrong way. That means that they'll, you know, you'll have them on your side.
I know exactly.
We know what you mean.
Yeah,
we get you. Okay, so they are generationally and institutionally loyal. They love to tell stories. You communicate through stories. Number three, and this is pretty obvious, they are often very fearful of any change taking place.
Why is that?
Oh, their whole life has been changed.
Mm.
I mean, you know, many of them actually probably still have a landline. And they may be the only people in church that have a landline.
My dad does.
Does he?
Yeah.
He has one?
I got two of them.
Yeah.
Well, and then they even have an answering machine at home.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's possible.
Oh, yeah.
But everything has changed in their life. I mean, I'm a baby boomer, and a lot's changed in my life, but I've kind of grew up in a time of change, okay? they didn't really. And all of a sudden, there's no Sears, there's no Kmart, there's no Montgomery Wards. There's, you know, all those things are gone. The gas stations they used to go to, the Texaco station where they come out and fill your gas, now they got to go to some Quick Trip and it's nothing but a huge food store. I mean, everything has changed. How they make a phone call. I mean, they got to, you know, they got to go into a Verizon store or a T-Mobile store and figure out what kind of phone I'm going to get, what kind of plan I'm going to. Listen, I was in one of those stores the other day, and sure enough, there was a builder generation couple there. And I mean, the young kid, he looked like he was about 12 who worked at this store, right? And he was trying to communicate to this builder generation about the different plans. And you could, it was like he was talking about men landed from Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just so different to these people. And you could tell the frustration level was so high. They just wanted a phone. But here's this plan, this much digital. You can do this with that and these apps. And the world is so complicated. Mm. And then for these, again, people who are very generationally and institutionally loyal, then even institutions like marriage are completely different now. You know, with legal gay marriage that, they don't recognize their nation. They don't recognize their culture. They don't recognize anything. And so there's been such drastic change that's taken place and change in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned pickleball. Mm-hmm. Do you know why pickleball is so popular among old people? Because it's relatively easy to play.
Yeah.
It's like ping pong.
Yeah.
I mean, you can stand in one place. So you can play it, but you don't have to move around
right.
a lot.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
And so they can do that without, you know, they can feel a little active without tearing up their
right,
knees and
exactly.
their backs and things like that. And so that makes them feel somewhat younger, and it's become really popular for that generation because they realize the change is taking place in their body. Maybe they used to play tennis. I can't play tennis anymore.
Yep.
Maybe they used to run. I can't run anymore. Maybe they used to do other kinds of activities, and they've had a knee replacement or a hip replacement. Mm-hmm. Or there's stuff that they're limited in what they can do physically.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do the things they used to do anymore. So, are you ready?
Yeah.
Drum roll here. So there's one place. That's not a very good drum roll.
That was a pretty weak drum.
It's a pretty weak podcast. Don't judge all podcasts by this one. The others will be better. I promise. But no. Actually,
promises,
Mark Kallik got in last night at 3:45 in the morning and really didn't sleep.
I'm ready for a Diet Coke.
Are you? Okay. Well,
in fact, I'm going to open my Diet Coke.
Go ahead and open it.
Okay.
There it is. Okay. But here's the drum roll.
Okay.
Here's the reason why they fear change in the church. Because the church is maybe the only place.
Mm-hmm.
Even their restaurants they used to go to, many of them are not there anymore,
yeah.
right? They've gone away, the restaurants. So there's one place they can drive to every week. And they can pull in the parking lot and park in the same spot, walk in the same door, sit in the same pew, sing the same songs,
mm-hmm.
look at the same silk plants, see everything. And,
all
of a sudden it's like, okay, now I'm in my own environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we have business meeting we have church council on the first Wednesday night of the month, business meeting on the second Wednesday night of the month. We approve the minutes as written, and we all this stuff, we know exactly what to do. And now you're going to come in here, this Gen Xer, and you're going to change all that?
Yep.
We're not going to be Baptist name anymore.
Right,
we're
right.
not going to have monthly business meetings anymore. We're not going to sing out of the hymnal anymore. We're not going to have pews anymore. And it's like, they're so fearful of that because change has been so drastic everywhere else. And you've heard me say this before. What has happened is the adversary has made them in such a way, he has convinced them, I should say, that the church as they experience it has become an idol to them. And they find comfort and meaning in the church as they experience it. And as a loving pastor, you just need to know that anytime you mention change, it is almost a post-traumatic experience for these people because change has been their entire recent life, and they're terrified of it and they're tired of it. So going in, just know that's who they are.
Well, and we call this practically, if you're a replanter or a pastor in revitalization and you're asking, okay, well, what do I do? This is why we talk about tactical patience.
Yes.
Be patient. Be slow in leading change. Be thoughtful. Be careful.
Yeah, we're not asking you not to change.
Right.
We're just trying to tell you that when they are resistant to change, it's not because they don't like the way you look or they're just mean and cantankerous. It's because they've had so much change in their life, they're just overwhelmed with it.
And I think it's important to understand that it's easy to come in and look at them and say, well, they're stuck in their ways. Mm-hmm. They're not stuck in their ways. They've been changing their whole life.
Exactly.
But, you know, they're just resistant to your ways.
Yeah.
And so it's the problem, and it takes us to this fourth point, is that their methodology almost becomes their doctrine.
Exactly. And so this is where, if you've been wondering, is there a point to this podcast? You're not the only ones. But actually there is. And here's the point. Number one, they are incredibly loyal to institutions. Number two, they love to tell stories. Number three, they're fearful of change, which all leads to this. They confuse methods with doctrine. So to them, having Sunday school at a certain hour, having Wednesday night service, having things the way they've always done it, that rises to the level of doctrine to them. It's just a method. But to them, it comes to doctrine. And again, it goes back to who they are and kind of how they're wired and what their worldview is. And I'm not telling you not to change those things, but to help them understand the difference between doctrine and methods.
Okay, help us to know, how would you advise me if I'm coming in, how do I lead this group of people in that direction? Does that make sense?
Yes. You don't start by telling them what they're doing wrong and how you're going to make changes no matter whether they like it or not, because if we don't, the church is going to die. You come in by helping them understand who Jesus is, falling more deeply in love with him, being gospel-centered in your conversations, in your preaching, in your leadership, in your personality, in everything you do with them, so that they begin to love Jesus more than the church as they know it. They love Jesus more than the methods that they use. But it's a discipleship thing over a period of time to help their hearts warm to Jesus more than to the methods. Right now, they've confused the methods and doctrine. They've merged into one. And the way you help them understand that is through good pastoral skills and preaching and discipleship.
That's good. That's
to
good.
Lead them to the place where they goes, no, it really isn't about what time Sunday school is or that we meet in this particular room or that we use this particular literature. It's all about Jesus. And that's not going to happen quick. Why? Because they're very loyal institutions, they're very slow to change, and they love to talk and tell stories. And unless you're willing to listen to their stories and engage them, understand where they're coming from, you're going to have a very short pastorate, right? Because they've been there a long time, and they'll be long there after you're gone if you do not listen well.
And you've got to get them to a point where they believe that they can make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's
good,
part of, that comes back to the very basis. I don't make a difference anymore. I'm not relevant anymore. And if you can get them to that point and teach them some practical ways that they will make a difference on a daily basis, they begin to believe that. And then they begin to understand, I'm still a tool in God's toolbox and I can be used for his glory. And I think that that becomes probably the most important thing that a young pastor can do if he's got a church that is significantly older, is that's your ministry right away. You know, it's not the people out on the street that you haven't reached yet. You can't reach them until you've got these people on your side.
Absolutely. And that's the point, really, of the podcast here. Don't overlook these who they are. God has placed them there, and they are your ministry, and they have a lot to offer if you'll just take time to get to know who they are, understand where they are in their life, and work with them from the point where they are to where they need to be.
I love this kind of stuff.
It's great.
I do
it's
love
great.
This.
So
you know, important. Actually, when I was in college, I actually took a number of courses on gerontology. And I was fascinated by it, And then I realized, the reason I was fascinated was because that's where I was going.
Hey, we're all headed there.
That's right.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening today. And we hope that it's been a blessing, at least stimulating, your thoughts and how you can improve your ministry. And I hope that you'll let folks know about it. Subscribe to the podcast if you listen on a format that where you can subscribe, and certainly let other folks know. Our podcast is growing slowly but surely.
I did have a guy text me last night, and he told me who this man was, and he's a builder generation. And he said he heard you got something like a podcast, and he doesn't know where to find it.
Yeah. Is that on the radio dial?
Exactly. That was just last night.
Wow.
We just don't think about that. Yep. Where do I find this podcast?
Yeah.
Any of your podcast platforms. What?
Yeah.
No, anyway, there just understand.
Yeah. No, I'm confused.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor, or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.